You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of get it, Ennis. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Oh, won't you stay, Burke, just a little bit longer. And this, my friends, it's episode 262. On today's show, the Knicks lose to the Boston Celtics, 121-112. Interestingly enough, I was at the game, so I got an up-close and personal look at the kids. We're going to talk about Frank. We're going to talk about Trey. We're going to talk about Emmanuel Mudiay. I'll share some thoughts on you guys with Troy Williams. I will bask in the glory of the ultra-rare three-point guard lineup that I got to witness in person. It was beautiful. We're going to talk about Boston fans in the garden. That's not beautiful. And so much more. All right, let's just start the show, all right? Marv, hit it!
Yes!
So like I said in the intro, I was at the game on Saturday night when the Knicks bravely, more or less, lost to the Boston Celtics. First of all, shouts to Daniel, Austin, Diego, I didn't get to meet you, Arnell, but shouts to you too. All the guys over at the GOAT podcast, they had me on their show on Saturday. If you haven't listened to the GOAT yet, highly recommend it. They take two players from the history of the NBA and debate them which one's better. They had one recently that was Sean Kemp and Amari Stoudemire. I enjoyed that one. You guys might enjoy it too. I was on their show to debate Patrick Ewing versus Willis Reed. It was a very Knicks-heavy show. I'm not going to spoil it and tell you what I said, who I thought was better. It's not up yet. They're going to release it soon. I'll let you guys know when they do release that episode. But head on over to the GOAT podcast. They do really fun, interesting stuff over there. I think you guys would like it. But I went on their show, and then Daniel and Austin, they are season ticket holders. So they graciously gave me one of their seats in section 103, very nice seats, went to the game. And shouts to Dan, because he literally knows everyone in the garden. Like, it was my Goodfellas, you know, like Henry and Karen moment when they go to the Copacabana, and it's that long tracking shot from behind them, and that song is playing the whole time. And then he kissed me. Lots of singing on this one. Must be in a good mood. But yeah, Dan knew like every person in the garden. He was like fist bumping security guards, saying what's up to everyone in their seats. Knew like secret entrances and elevators. It was a good time. It was unfortunately infested with Boston fans. You know, obviously the Knicks are in full tank mode. Boston is in trying to win a championship mode. It made my skin crawl. It was disgusting. There was just so much green at the garden. It was horrifying, but it did inject a fun, like, energy into the game. You know, if they were playing the Milwaukee Bucks, it wouldn't have been quite the same. So even though it was annoying that they lost to Boston, those disgusting, despicable monsters from that horrifying, racist city, you know, there was energy. And energy's good. Energy's fun. Energy's positive. If you channel it the right way, you know? So these were good seats, and Dan knows everyone in the garden. So we went to the Delta Sky Lounge at halftime. If you've ever done one of these things, if you haven't done one of these things, when you have really good seats, they give you access to a lounge where at halftime they have a spread of like all the food you could imagine. It's like an Italian wedding. You know, there's like shrimp cocktail and oysters on the half shell. There weren't oysters, but they have a carving station with like nice meat that they're carving for you, free popcorn and like cookies and I've done this a handful of other times. I've been, you know, lucky enough to get these kind of seats. And it just never gets old seeing rich people stuff their pockets with food and generally just hoarding way more resources than they need. You know, these are very expensive seats. And then they're just, like, stuffing cheap cookies into their jacket pockets like it's the last cookie on earth. But it really, it's both entertaining and a sober, you know, reminder of the American way, of how the wealthy people act in our country, just hoarding way more for themselves than they actually need. But let's stick to sports. I got a live scouting report, a very quick live scouting report. It's always a little bit different when you see these guys in person than on TV. And three quick hits. Moutier looks faster in person than he does on TV, for sure. Frank looks much skinnier in person. This is the first good look I got at him in person. He really does look like a little Bambi out there. I mean, like a 6'5" Bambi, but still. He's like such a little guy. He's so thin right now, which makes me more confident in him for his future development. Once he puts on some weight, I'm telling you guys. More on Frank in a little bit. And another quick hit, live scouting report. Troy Williams is very fast, very athletic. Really comes through when you see him in person. I'm going to talk to you guys about the point guards. We got a lot of minutes from the three important young point guards in this game. I want to start with Trey Burke. But first, just want to remind y'all that you're listening. Excuse me. Got something like stuck in my throat. That you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to 5 stars. God damn it. Why do I keep doing that? Head on over to iTunes. Rate us 5 stars. Give us a 1-sentence review. We'd really appreciate it. Once again, that's Locked On Knicks. Let's talk about Trey Burke. What can you say about Trey Burke that hasn't also been said about Michael Jordan? They wear the same number. I mean, that kind of dawned on me the other day. This is a guy who was sort of known for having a head that was a little too big for his shoulders early on in the league. Part of his problem was a little bit of an attitude problem. He admits it, right? He's trying to grow and move past it. But anyone who has 23 on their jersey doesn't lack for confidence. He's obviously not Michael Jordan, but Trey Burke right now is a scoring machine. I mean, what else can you say? 26 points Saturday night in 26 minutes. A true point-per-minute player. 26 points on 10 of 19 shooting. But he shot even better than that, because at the end when they were just desperately trying to come back and nothing was working, he hoisted up a couple, which were a little bit out of rhythm. But again, 10 of 19 shooting, he shot very well. 2 of 6 from downtown, it's okay, you know, 4 of 5 from the line. Now, those 26 points, it's going to be very interesting to see if Trey Burke can keep this up, because he scores a lot of them on jump shots. On, you know, good-looking, smooth-looking jump shots. He looks in control, but jump shots nonetheless. He made 4 of 7 long mid-range twos in this one by my, you know, non-official calculations, just looking at his shot chart. So that's more than 50% from that distance, and that's, you know, a little bit above unsustainable. That's an excellent number, generally speaking. So when you're scoring a hefty amount of your points that way, you know, you can't necessarily expect that to be there every game. But we'll see. Once in a while, one of these little guys catches fire, a la Isaiah Thomas. And they just keep doing it over and over again, even though it seems like the degree of difficulty is way too high. You know, he did get to the rim, though, too. He wasn't just living by the jumper. There's just a lot of them. So he had 4 shots at the rim in this one, and he made 3 of 4. So that was nice. And he was 1 of 2 on short mid-range shots. But when you look at his game, you know, he's just getting to his spots at will. He looks super fast out there. He looks very in control. You see someone like Moutier barrel down the lane, and I was sitting maybe, I don't know, 25, 30 rows back, and Moutier came into the lane a couple times, and I felt like he was going to run me over 30 rows back. Like, it just didn't seem like he'd be able to stop, gather himself. In contrast, Trey Burke looks like he's really in control of his body. He didn't just score in this one. He distributed very well. He had 8 assists, much of them coming when the game was on the line late in the fourth quarter. He assisted his teammates on 42% of their made shots. That's 98th percentile. It's an excellent distributing performance. Once again, I mean, he got 8 assists. Remember, 26 minutes. All right. So very strong numbers from him. The way he was used, given how he was performing, I mean, Hornacek has got to be actively trying to tank right now. Not just, you know, playing the young guys, but actively trying to tank. Burke was by far their best playmaker and scorer in the first half, okay? He had 15 first half points on 6 of 9 shooting. The next highest Nick was Timmy with a respectable 10 points, but still 50% more than him. He was getting it done, and he was clearly by far and away the most important Nick from an offensive standpoint. So what happens in the third quarter? We don't see Trey Burke at all. He gets in with like 1 minute left in the third quarter. Then he plays the entire fourth, you know, and the fourth is crunch time, but there's got to be a better way than that. This guy is the guy driving your engine in the first half, and you don't see him at all in the third quarter? Like, what are they trying to accomplish there? I really think Hornacek is actively trying to tank at this point. If he's not, he's truly terrible. If he was trying to win that game, it made no sense. Speaking of weird minutes distribution, let's talk about Troy Williams, because what happened with Trey Burke, there was something relatedly deranged that happened with Troy Williams. Troy Williams got 12 minutes, all of them in the fourth quarter of a close game after not playing at all game. I mean, this is the substitution pattern of someone who actively does not care about winning, right? Which is fine, but don't you want to put this guy in a little bit of a better position to succeed? Like, let him get his feet wet with, I don't know, 5 minutes in the first half. His first minutes playing at home at Madison Square Garden in the world's greatest arena come against Boston in a tight game in the fourth quarter with no playing time before that. It just seems odd to me. I don't know. It's not the biggest deal, but it's a pattern of bizarre behavior from Jeff Hornacek. That being said, Troy Williams, in my mind, has definitely earned himself a longer look, perhaps a second 10-day contract. I'm not calling him our small forward of the future. I'm not sure he can shoot or pass, which are two pretty important skills, but whoo-wee! This guy's an athlete. When guys close out on him, which I'm not sure they'll keep doing if they know who he is, because he hasn't made a lot of shots from the perimeter yet, but when guys close out on him, he can attack in a straight line with quickness, often using acrobatic finishes that don't seem as out of control as they should for some of the wild, you know, antics that he pulls off with his various one-handed up-and-unders, under-the-basket reverse layups. But when I watched him in person, he looked pretty in control, even though it was, like, pretty wild and creative and full of flourishes and moving parts. You know, these Rube Goldberg machine layups that he comes up with. He was 6 of 9 from the field for 14 points. Like I said, shooting not hot. Missed all 3 of his 3-point attempts. Otherwise, all of his attempts were at the rim, which was nice. But yeah, 3-point attempts, he's like a little too excited maybe. He did this weird, like his legs did a weird thing on one of them where they kind of like, he almost clicked his heels like a jumping leprechaun or a jumping Irishman celebrating something, you know? Like a hee-hee! It was weird. It was a weird thing for your leg to do on a 3-point shot. And, you know, so I said he was 6 of 9 for 14 points. Some of those were garbage time buckets, but he acquitted himself quite well, I think, given the circumstances. He had a putback slam that made me jump out of my seat for the only time all night, other than when Frank hit his driving layup, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But first, I want to remind you guys that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We got a podcast for every team in the NBA and the NFL. If you like the Knicks, you probably like the New York Giants. Locked On Giants has new hosts, Patricia Traina and Ed Valentine. They do an excellent job. I really think you guys should check it out. Recently, they had an episode which I enjoyed. It featured Sage Rosenfels, who is a former quarterback for the Vikings. He's actually the host of Locked On Vikings. But he was on the show talking about Pat Shurmur and what his offense might look like and what the Giants might want to do in this draft and a whole lot of other interesting stuff if you're a Giants fan. So if you like the New York Giants, check out Locked On Giants. Let's talk about Frank Ntilikina. Frank Ntilikina. Guarida Frank Ntilikina. Frank Ntilikina. Guarida Frank Ntilikina. He had just about 24 minutes in this one, which is a spicy amount of minutes. Perfect in my eyes. And big story for me in this game for Frank is Frankie goes to the hole. Frankie goes to Hollywood. He missed all three of his three-point attempts. Frankie goes to Hollywood was off the dome, by the way. I'm not bragging, I'm just saying. He missed all three of his three-point attempts in this one because he can't put it all together yet. They were all from the left wing, interestingly. One of them was when time was expiring and he had to put it up, so I'm not going to hold that against him. 0-for-2 from the left wing from beyond the arc. Otherwise, he was 4-for-6 offensively. He had a nice left-handed, like full-speed, fast-break layup off a... this was a nice transition play for the Knicks, actually. A steal by Lance Thomas. Quick pass to Trey Burke. Burke finds Frank streaking down the left-hand side of the court. Frank tanks it up with his left hand, full speed. Doesn't back iron it and have it go flying, you know, off the rim. Puts just enough touch on it. And that's big for Frankie. We've seen him miss a couple of those. We've seen him make a couple of those. But every time he makes one, you know, it's just money in the bank. Nice muscle memory. Nice practice. So nice to see that out of him. Other offensive things I saw from Frank in this game. Twice he did a pick and pop with Kyle O'Quinn. He made the first one, missed the second one. I like to see him getting pick and roll reps. That's important for his development. And he looked confident in doing so. On the first one, I believe it was in the second quarter. So he's at the top of the key, above the break, beyond the arc. And he, you know, he kind of like shoos someone away and he shouts at Kyle O'Quinn, you know, gently in his Frank Ntilikina way. And he points to a spot on the floor he wants him to go. Kyle O'Quinn goes there, just about at the left elbow. Frank kind of like licks his finger a little bit, does a little ba-doop. Kind of like, not really a crossover, but does a little shake. Goes left around the pick, pulls up real confidently, smooth, straight up, drains the jumper. He looked confident, he looked collected. It was a very nice play. I like to see that out of him. Later on, he took three Celtics off the dribble off a broken play from the top of the arc. Went up with his left hand again for the layup on this one. He showed the Jets, showed some burst. It was a nice offensive game for Frank. He got 5 rebounds, only 1 assist, but he didn't play much as a true point guard at all, I think. He may have gotten like a minute, but basically, he was always in with another point guard. And he only had 1 turnover. And of course, 1 steal. That was a big moment for me, seeing a Frank steal live and in person. But I just mentioned that Frank barely got time as the lead point guard. Which, in this game, I'm fine. Whatever. I hope he, you know. Because he was still getting... he was initiating the offense in half-court sets from time to time. So they got him the kind of looks that you would expect a point guard to get. Not a ton of them, but some of them. It wasn't completely forgotten. We saw a lot of all 3-point guards in this one. And we saw the immortal 3-point guard lineup. Dan Austin and I kind of couldn't believe it. We're like, wait, are all 3 of these guys in right now? Burke, Frank, Emmanuel, all in the game. Only saw 1.8 minutes of time together. But what a glorious 1.8 minutes of time it was. They rounded out that lineup very wisely with Lance Thomas and Enes Kanter, you know, trying to make sure they had 4 guys on the court who can't shoot. When the league zigs, you gotta zag, you know what I mean? I believe Moutier was playing the 3 defensively in this look, so that's interesting. Stronger than Frank, just as tall as him right now. That kind of makes some sense, right? We saw 2 steals from this lineup in 1.8 minutes. Just being there in the building and feeling the energy and letting it wash over me of this 3-point guard lineup was a true delight. It felt like the ultimate troll job from Hornacek. All year long, we're begging for these guys. Don't see him. Steady diet of Jarrett Jack. Then we get all 3 at once. In a look that we probably don't need to see much of. But hey, you know. I gotta say, like this 3-point guard lineup, in many ways, it reminded me what it is to feel joy again in life. It really did it for me. Someone who didn't do it for me as much in this one, the third and weakest link of the point guard tripod, is Emmanuel Moutier. Another meh game from him. Another meh game from Emmanuel Moutier in his 25 minutes of action. And yes, that is the worst joke I've ever written or performed or in any way have been associated with. And you guys were here to witness it, so you're welcome. Manuel Mudiay had 13 points on a very inefficient 4 of 12 shooting. He did get to the line a lot. That was nice. His percentage once there was not nice. 5 of 8 from the line. And he's just, seeing him in person, he's such an awkward finisher. I said it earlier, he really looks out of control when he barrels into the lane. He is fast, but he can't really harness it yet. He had 6 assists, which was good to see. Did look to distribute, but 4 turnovers, and they were pretty bad. He had a bad kind of, I don't want to call it lazy, but like a bad floating cross-court pass that got picked off with great ease by Jason Tatum, who then took it to the hole and front-rimmed a dunk so hard, blew it. It was so beautiful to watch in action, to watch Jason Tatum self-sun himself. This was really one good thing for this, for me as a Knicks fan in this one. It was a Kyrie Irving showcase. The young guys didn't really dominate in this one as much as we've seen in the past. Kyrie Irving looked the part, played very well. But Jason Tatum front-rimming that dunk. Mwah! Chef-kissing fingers. GIF. And yes, GIF is the only correct pronunciation of GIF. Don't be an idiot. Another bad turnover from Mudiay was a pocket pass on a pick-and-roll that he tried to thread through both defenders when there was no room, and it predictably hit off their bodies and they stole it. So not great in terms of protecting the ball from Mudiay. We know that's been a problem with him. 4 rebounds was nice to see. He hustled. Didn't really notice his defense, to be honest, but he was a -7 overall. He didn't do anything to distinguish himself there. Clearly, least effective of the Knicks' 3-point guards, which is why I'm sure he's locked up the starting role for the rest of the season. A couple of stray thoughts to close out my coverage of the Knicks' loss to the Celtics on Saturday night. Horney once again used the defensively challenged front court duo of Beasley and Cantor, which remains a bad idea for winning games and a great idea for the tank. Let's talk about plus-minus. The plus-minus hero was a two-way tie, actually, between Lance Thomas and Damian Dotson. They were both +9, but Lance played 24 minutes and Dotson played 6. So I'm going to give it to Lance in the tiebreaker there. Way to go, Lance. Speaking of Dotson, he got some nice rebounds in his 6 minutes. He got 4 in only 6 minutes. He made his only shot, which was a transition pull-up jumper from the elbow. I liked it in person. It seemed what the defense was giving him. He caught them scrambling. He pulled up with confidence. He looked at control, so that was nice to see. However, he turned the ball over 3 times. None of them looked particularly good. He fell out of bounds, kind of out of control on a fast break. He was running the break. He got the ball. He was under the basket, and he kind of just threw it to the Celtics under the basket in a desperate attempt to keep the ball in bounds. Another turnover was actually a nice play by Marcus Smart, but it was also a semi-telegraphed pass. He was at the elbow at the top of the arc, and he kind of just a lazy swing pass. Marcus Smart picked it off, went coast to coast, had a nice Euro step finish. So, some mixed performance from Dotson in this one, but he did some nice things. He just didn't get a lot of time. The plus-minus turkey on the evening was Michael Beasley with a -19, just edging out Tim Hardaway Jr., who was -18 in his 33 minutes. A few more than I'd like to see from him as we wind down the season. So not a great performance from Timmy. He had 17 points on 16 shots, not super efficient. He was 3 of 8 from downtown, 2 assists. Looked to run in transition, but 3 turnovers. That's a killer. He had 2 rebounds, 1 steal. That's okay. And less than what we want to see out of Timmy at this point. So a below average game from him. Not one of these horror show games where he goes 0 for 45 from the field. So I guess that's an improvement, but not a great one either. All in all, a pretty good loss to Boston. I liked what I saw from a lot of the young guys. Burke continues to show out. Frank had some nice offensive moments. Good to see 3-point guards out there at once. That was insane. Shouts again to all the guys from the GOAT for having me on their show and for taking me to the game. It was a great time. Thank you, guys. That's it for us. That's it for today's episode of Locked On Knicks. I want to thank you guys very much for listening. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes, 5 stars. Leave a sentence or 2 review. That helps that review count more in those demonic algorithms, but we gotta play that game. You know what I mean? We're in the game. We gotta play the game. Subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Tell your friends about Locked On Knicks if you think they'll like it. Of course they will. Are they crazy? Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks. You can follow me on Twitter at NBA Injury Report. Be chill to each other. Have a good rest of your weekend if you're listening to this on Sunday, if you're listening to this thousands of years in the future. Greetings. I hope this episode has been a small ray of light into the way things used to be for us before the singularity. Anyway, that's it for us, guys. Talk to you later. Peace!